Blog Talk Radio.
This is Chief for Yourself. John's guest today is Simon Drew, author of The Poet and the Sage, A Journey Beyond the Distant Hills.
Hi, welcome to Chief for Yourself. Great to have you with us wherever you are in the world at this moment. Our guest on today's show from Australia is Simon Drew. Simon is a poet, musician, photographer, and philosophical mentor. This is actually our second conversation, the first centered on Guji and some of the intentions of Chi for Yourself. Simon's poetry and writings often dive into the realms of mysticism, prophecy, and wisdom, bringing the deepest insights of his consciousness to light as he searches for answers to life's most fundamental questions. Simon Drew is the author of The Poet and the Sage, A Journey Beyond the Distant Hills. How would you describe what it is that you do?
Yeah, well, I guess, first, thank you so much, John, for having me on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation that we had on the Walled Garden podcast, and I'm looking forward to many more collaborations. But I guess when I describe what I do to people, I often have a hard time figuring it out, because I could say, you know, okay, well, I'm this or I'm that. I'm a poet. I'm certainly, you know, a poet, because that's the way that I write. I'm also a musician. I also coach people. You know, I do this podcast. I do all sorts of things, and I bring them all together. And I guess when I really think about what it is that I'm doing, I kind of take a step back and I look at all of the things, how they fit together, and what they're all aiming at. And I think what all of these things that I do really aiming at is being a forager of wisdom, you know, really seeing if I can, I guess as Sharon LaBelle would say, one of my collaborators, she says, you know, we need to learn how to liberate the wisdom from these ancient texts and bring them into our modern times. And that's essentially what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to bring people in on that adventure that I'm going on. And so, you know, whether it is in the podcast or the coaching or the music or the poetry, all of these things, they're all pointing towards how can we find deeper wisdom in our lives in a time when I think wisdom is sadly in short supply. But I think that there are a lot of people who are rediscovering what it would mean to have something like wisdom.
Now, this is your first published work of poetry, I believe. Is that...
Certainly is, yeah.
Yeah,
and first book, yeah, first poetry, everything. Yeah.
Buffer the whole. I'm wondering, did you have leanings in this direction when you were growing up? I mean, you know, is this something that you did as a child? Did you think poetically, or was that a part of you, or is this just a recent pursuit?
Well, yeah, I think. Here's the funny thing. When I began writing this book, The Poet and the Sage, I guess I always thought that I would write like a book about Stoicism. I thought I'd write like here's a 10-step guide how to, you know, live this philosophical life, or write some sort of personal development book or something like that. But then when I started writing, I was really in the mindset at this point that this is the right time to start writing the book. And perhaps it would be better if I just listened to what it is that I naturally feel the need to write, and the language that I choose to write in, you know, choose as in like I let it come through me into the page. And it was really funny. It's the book that I never thought I would write, but it's the book that I had to write. It's the book that came out. And the funny thing about this is writing this book completely changed the relationship that I have with my parents, because I never was interested in poetry growing up. Never really read any apart from the Bible, and there's tons of poetry in the Bible, and I was brought up in the Christian sense, but nonetheless I never had an interest in poetry at all. But my father is a beautiful poet, and so I'd read some of his stuff, and he would read that stuff to us as well. He writes poems about every single member of the family, and he writes about the places he visits when he goes out on his sales trips, and he's really a master of words, and he really takes you there. And so what I discovered about writing this book, well, it showed me that I really am his son, and that's just naturally a part of who I am. It's just bubbling up to the surface. And that if I just let go and stop trying to think, well, this is what I should write, or that's what I should write, what naturally comes out is that the most pure, unadulterated picture of my soul, which really relates back to my childhood, even though I never would have expected it.
Well, it sounds like they were very supportive, really, of all your pursuits. I mean, whether it was writing or music, were they there for you, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I really had I had the perfect upbringing, and I don't mean that in any egotistical sense. I mean I'm very, very grateful that my lot in life was to grow up on a small farm in the hinterland, in the hills here on the Sunshine Coast of Australia. You know, my parents, they had this really beautiful way of, you know, they noticed if I was heading in a certain direction, or if I was drawn to a certain say instrument, or if I was drawn to a certain you know, skill. And so anytime I said, you know, hey, I really want to do this, they would support me 100% of the way and say, you know what, if you really want to do that, go and, you know, work your hardest and see if you can make something of it. And so I would breed, you know, show chickens. You know, I'd take all of my chickens to the local agricultural shows. I had the champion turkey of Queensland, the champion flying pigeon of Queensland. I would ride horses, and, you know, I'd be, you know, playing the didgeridoo, the sacred instrument of the Aboriginals over here, just a beautiful instrument in my music. And so they were very, very supportive. And I think that what that taught me was they really instilled in me that one of the true joys in life is following the goods of your soul, you know, the things that you're naturally drawn to. It's not just a simple game of economics. We come here, you know, we make a bit of money, we die. No, there's more to that. Men do not live off bread alone. They really lived off that. You know, like, we need to teach our kids that there's more to life than just that pursuit. You've got to go after these things that draw you in. And so I'm now rediscovering that all of these things that they really supported me on throughout my childhood are reemerging as I'm getting to know those parts of myself more, even to the point where I recently bought myself a didgeridoo. I haven't played it in so long. It was my first instrument when I was younger, but it's the right time now to get that back out and say, okay, I was obsessed with it when I was young. Let's see if I can actually bring this into my music and what I'm doing. So I'm trying to follow that path, I guess.
You're obviously following your heart, and it seems as though you always have. Today, there seems to be a message that, and I see this in a lot of content creators, that the thing to do is to pursue the fields, the jobs that pay the most, you know, that can take you, get you what you want. It's the old story that I heard when I was a kid, where, you know, go out there and hustle and make a lot of money. I thought we had come farther than that, and I'm hearing it again, and it really disturbs me, because some of these people are making good money telling young people to do that. What would you say to someone who is kind of not sure about what they want to do? They kind of have a little spark in there, but they're hearing these messages, and I think you're a good person to speak to that type of soul who says, look, I want to do something that's more a part of me, inside of me, but yet I'm being told to do something else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really complicated landscape that we live in right now, right? I mean, I was very influenced by Jim Rohn when I was growing up as well. And I feel like what Jim Rohn did, for those of the listeners who don't know him, a great personal development kind of guru from back in the day, one of the originals. And what I liked about Jim Rohn was he was all about practical wisdom, which is, you know, like he said, all that motivation stuff, it's a bunch of hogwash, because, you know, if you motivate an idiot, for example, all you've got is a motivated idiot, and that's actually really dangerous. So, you know, we don't want more of that. What we want, we want to talk about aims. What's the correct aim in your life? You know, that falls into your life philosophy. And philosophy is complicated. Like, it's not as simple. It's definitely not as simple as, like, okay, go out there and hustle and make as much money as you want. Like, now, there is value in that. I really believe that if people have the opportunity to go out there and make a sufficient living for their family, find a little bit of joy in their life and, you know, taking care of the people around them, and there is real meaning to be found in having a job that pays well and climbing a corporate ladder, even. Like, I think that that's absolutely fine. And And so I think that's one of the things that I learned when I went into the kind of corporate space, or when I went into the kind of day-to-day job space, I just learned that that's not in my DNA, right? For a lot of people, that's exactly what they should do, right? But then there's some people who really should be following the dictates of their heart and, you know, following that path that calls them down, whether it's an artistic journey or an entrepreneurial journey. But I think that the wrong advice is, you know, like, just follow your heart 100% of the way, because the thing is, being an artist or being an entrepreneur, it's like, these are some of the most difficult things that you will ever do. If you have the opportunity to do them, it's not a matter of following your bliss and just going out there and everybody's going to bow before you and your creative genius. That's just not how it works. And so I think we all need to have a nuanced look at this and say, what are the things that call out to you in your individual life, the needs of the moment? You know, do you have a family? Are you taking care of a family? Okay, well, you are going to find a lot of deep meaning in taking care of your family and finding a job that can support you all in a helpful way. Now, for me personally, I happen to fall into the category of somebody who has the ability and drive to go on an artistic journey, but I'm also at a period in my life where I have a window of opportunity, meaning I have a few years where I know that if I really dedicate myself, it's not going to be that dangerous for me to take a few risks here and to really try and follow what my heart is telling me to do. So I'm taking that opportunity. But, you know, I deal with this in my coaching practice a lot, which is that people need to have a very nuanced look at their life, not just to say that this is the thing I'm going to do or this is going to be the thing I do. Take a look at all the things that are in your view. How can you make it work so that all of these pieces fit together, and so that you're not just, you know, you might have a family and then you just decide, I'm going to go off and do my artistic journey and screw taking care of my family. That's not the wrong answer. That's not the right answer, you know. So I don't know. I always like to take a balanced view of these things and say, follow your heart, yes, but also there's a practical nature to life that needs to be taken care of. So
musicians talk about their method of writing a song, what they do, how they put it down in the early stages. What does a poet do? What do you hear, or what do you think about? Is there such a thing as a hook, like there is in a song? I mean, where do you come from to start the process of writing poetry?
Well, I can only speak to my experience, and my experience has been the more I get out of the way, the more the thing happens. And so what I mean by that, I guess, there came a point where I started to realize that if I went into a writing session thinking, this is the thing that I want to write, this is the message that I want to present, it didn't work how I thought it was going to work, right? But if I went in thinking, I'm just going to open my mind to the possibilities of this moment and see what naturally flows out, that's when the real magic starts to happen. And so what will happen is maybe 5 to 10, maybe 10 minutes before I start writing, a thought will pop into my head, or the first line of a poem, or just some little idea that just sticks on my mind. And it feels like it sticks on my mind. And I think, great, I'll pick that off. I'll put that on the page. I'll see what happens. Sometimes it goes really well. Sometimes not that often though, you know, it leads to nothing. But I've really found that as I just get out of the way and allow that process to happen, that's when the real magic happens. And that's how I wrote the entire Poet and the Sage, is just by allowing this narrative to piece together. And it's actually kind of, it's freaky, because it really makes me realize how little I know who I am or how I work as a human being. Because what often will happen with my writings is I'll write one little bit here, and then the next bit, and then the next bit. I'll fill up all of these journals here, right? I'll just fill these journals. But then it doesn't fit chronologically. What happens is I have to take this bit over here, and that fits directly there, and this bit fits here, and this bit fits here. But at the end, you see that the whole thing comes together. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm creating each individual piece of the puzzle, and then I'm putting the puzzle together. And I think that that is what's so exciting about the artistic process. Is it's not something, what do they say? Do not lord it over it. You know, I do not lord it over myself. I do not put restrictions on myself. What I say is, I'm here to write, or I'm here to play didgeridoo, or I'm here to play piano. But as I create, it all comes together, and the things start to flow. So that's pretty much how I do it.
Our guest on this Chi for Yourself is Simon Drew, author of The Poet and the Sage, A Journey Beyond the Distant Hills. What makes a poem, for lack of a better word, good?
I'm going to see with my experience. Let me tell it like this. A few months ago, I went and I did a bit of an exhibition with my photography, music, and poetry. And this was at a beautiful garden center in these botanical gardens near where I live. I started to notice that the people who were really having a great experience with my poetry, meaning people who came along and started reading and would cry, or they would sit with a poem for a long time and think, this just really touches me. It was funny how most of those people, if not all of them, who actually had that experience were Christian, because they had that mythological, kind of mytho-poetic upbringing where they understood that kind of sacred poetry, sacred text. And they understood the metaphorical structures. And so I don't even understand that. Somebody came in, they read one of my poems, and they said, do you believe this? She was like a Baptist. She said, do you believe what you're writing? And it had like themes of prophecy and all sorts of things in it. And I was like, I don't know how to answer that. I just wrote this thing, right? You tell me what you think, right? But and what that really taught me was that what I've noticed is that the more people have transformative experiences with my poetry, really it's coming from a place where I have almost uploaded the emotions and the intensity of the moment when I was writing that poem. And that emotion and that intensity and that artistic structure that links it to my tradition and my culture is now embodied within that poem. And when somebody truly sits with the poem, so it's as much the problem of the viewer as it is of the creator, right? The viewer has to sit with the poem, they have to meditate with it, they have to be there with it. And if they do that, the emotions and the intensity transfer through that poem. And I've found that with reading people like Bukowski, for example. Nobody does this better than Bukowski. Man, yeah. He, you know, brilliant. You feel everything that he feels. The same with Rilke, you know, these beautiful poets. So that's what I try to do, is just, I'm a man of feeling, I'm a man of heart, I'm a man of great intensity in everything that I do. I try to transfer that, and I hope that I give those poems to people who have eyes to see, ears to hear, you know, a heart to feel. Maybe then they'll see what I'm trying to get across in there.
Mm-hmm. Proactive. I like that. You mentioned your photography. Has photography brought any useful slants to your poetry writing?
Yeah, well, I will say there's this beautiful poet, photographer here on the Sunshine Coast who takes photos of these all of the bird life around the Sunshine Coast, just gorgeous photos. He said something, and I'm going to echo what he said. I can't remember his name, but nonetheless, he said that I learned how to see when I started taking photos of these birds. Before that, I never knew how to see. That's the role of any artist, is to teach the people of their culture how to truly see something. So when I started taking photographs, I started to notice what I was being drawn to take pictures of. What really called me at the start, when I started to actually think of myself as a photographer, was I'd be walking in nature and I would see these tiny little details, whether it was a beautiful little spider web or a little flower growing in the field, or just tiny little things that you might not notice otherwise. And you go in and you get close to that and you be with that moment, that thing, and you take an image of that, and all of a sudden you've captured something that 99.999% of people would just walk by. And then when I started taking photos of wildflowers, all of a sudden I was seeing wildflowers everywhere on the Sunshine Coast that I never would have seen before, because I just wasn't attentive to them. I wasn't paying attention at all. But then a whole new world opened up, because I was searching for these beautiful, just marvelous wildflower varieties that grow here on the Sunshine Coast. And so what it really is the thing that photography gives me. It gives me the opportunity to go into nature and to sit there with nature and to be amongst nature and to actually see something, rather than just going for a run in the park or, you know, just going for a hike or something like that. I want to stop and I want to look and I want to see something. And that's, I guess, what photography does for everything that I'm putting together.
Now, it's midsummer for you right now, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so turn around. The phrase being in alignment appears in the book from time to time, and I get visions of what it's like. I get a visceral feeling of being in alignment. If you would, just kind of expound on that, what it means to be in alignment.
Certainly, yeah. Well, I guess in The Poet and the Sage, there's certainly a theology that is making its way throughout the entire book. There's a philosophy of life that's in there. And really the book does wrestle with this question of what it would mean to be in alignment. This is something that I probably have simple explanations for, and I also have complicated explanations for. But nonetheless, I also want to say that this is something that I wrestle with constantly as well. I think I'm not finished with The Poet and the Sage. There's much more to come that still wrestles with this question. But alignment, I guess I could put it like this, is we all have, like Jim Rohn, he said that the major determining factor for your life of how it turns out is going to be your life philosophy, you know. Regardless of what lot you are given when you come into this world, right? Regardless of how much you have or don't have, your life philosophy is going to be the thing that really governs where you go next and how you live your life. Now, a lot of us, we have these ideas about who we want to be, you know, what kind of life we want to live, how we want to show up in the world. And so that's why one of the first things that I do for any of my clients when they come to me is I say, go away and write your personal philosophy or your personal ideal, which means go away and take a look at your family and relationships, your career, you know, your health and fitness, your spirituality, all these areas of your life that make up who you are. And just write a few notes about who you want to be in those areas. Now, alignment to me, the simple explanation, I feel like it's that moment that we can all recognize, right? It's when our actions in the world match the ideal that we have set for ourselves, right? Now, we all know what it feels like to be out of alignment because we all know what it feels like to be presenting this version of ourselves to the public and saying, I'm this, you know, great, happy, successful person and I have no bad habits, I'm perfect. But then, you know, you go into a bout of watching pornography every day or you eat way too much food and you get overweight or you know, all these bad habits start to flow back into your life that you know are really not serving you well, and that's being out of alignment because then you start to feel like, you know, what's going on? Like, there's incongruency there between who you believe you could be and who you actually are. So I try to help people to bring their habits into alignment with their vision of what their life could be so that, you know, they can move in that straight and narrow path towards what would be absolutely best for them, I guess.
When you work with clients, do you recommend meditative or contemplative practices to go along with their efforts?
Yeah, well, I think I'm very open with my clients in terms of the approach that I take with all of my clients is less of a prescriptive approach and more of a kind of Socratic dialogue that we engage in between ourselves. Essentially what I say to all of my clients is I want you to walk away from this session feeling as though you've just had a really deep and meaningful conversation with a close friend who cares for you and cares enough about you to tell you the truth about what you're doing with your life. And so we have these conversations, and I think I'm very careful that, you know, meditation, this is something that we could generally recommend to everybody and everybody will likely get some sort of good result with it. But nonetheless, I'm also careful to say to my clients, well, listen, I want you to find a path that really works for you. Now, a lot of people get their meditation out of prayer. That's their meditation. A lot of people get meditation out of journaling. It's an opportunity to pause and to actually just think about your life, be in that moment and mindful of how you're living your life. And so I try to help people to build healthy habits, for sure, but habits that fit well into who that person is as an individual. And so I tell all of my clients, I'm not going to give you like a 10-step, here's how to be a stoic, or here's how to be a philosophical person, here's how to live, you know, your best life in 10 steps. I don't believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
What I do believe in the power of true, honest conversation between two people who genuinely care for each other. And I think that's where the true therapy comes from, and the transformation as well.
A number of the lines in the book kind of reminded me of other verses, and they gave me thoughts that I don't know if they were actually what you were saying, but for instance, in the prologue to the book, heaven is a place where people go to find their story. And for some reason, that reminded me of the verse, the kingdom of God is within. And I'm thinking this is an inner job, to put it in workman's terms. You have to go inside, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. And this is, I've actually been thinking about this, because the kind of subtitle of the book is A Journey Beyond the Distant Hills. So I'm playing with metaphor in this book to paint a picture of what it might be like for a person to rise above the external concerns of their life, perhaps, just for a brief moment, and to go inside their mind. And, you know, we can look towards distant hills in the external world, and we can have that curiosity saying, I wonder what's beyond those hills. I wonder what adventure I could go on if I decided to walk across these plains and go to those distant hills and climb above them and see what I find up there. This is what I did in my youth. You know, I grew up in the field, in the hills, and going throughout the forestry there, it's just, you know, you're filled with a sense of awe, and you're filled with a sense of adventure. But we can do that in our minds as well, because there are distant hills in our mind, metaphorically. You know, we can all see that if you close your eyes, you look back into your mind, you realize it's black, it's dark, but oh my gosh, it's just as complicated, just as deep, just as expansive as the world that we see outside of ourselves. And so when I say heaven is a place that, you know, you go to find your story, I'm really talking about that world above, the world where you go within and you look within and you say, where are those distant hills in my mind? Now let me go beyond those and see what I find there, perhaps bring something of value back to this center that is me. So I'm still wrestling with many of the things that I wrote in the book, in the same way that I said to that lady, I don't really know whether I believe them. It's like, I just wrote it. You tell me, right? But it's certainly it's a horrifying experience. And I think it should be a horrifying experience to see how, when a poet writes something, when I write something like that, it mimics this metaphorical structure that we see in other kind of sacred texts and things like that. And you start to think, okay, this is very strange. This is the subconscious bubbling up that Jung spoke about, you know, and it's a strange experience. Yeah.
I'd love to make this a template that we could lay on top of the madness that the world is experiencing right now. Is there some way to take this into the craziness and to make it, you know, somehow stick with people? Or are we beyond that? How could you see that working today?
Yeah, it's I think we all have to do what we can individually do in our lives to bring about a little bit more understanding, a little bit more wisdom in a time where many people are very easily flowing over that waterfall, you know, and there are a few people kind of standing on the side watching this happen and thinking, what on earth can I do to stop this? You know, what on earth can I do to insert a little bit more wisdom into the world? That's essentially what I'm trying to do with this book and with everything that I'm doing, whether it's with, you know, the book or my other poetry, my music. I'm trying to explore what would be the most important information that we might learn as humanity. And I really think, like, if that's not the question that we're all trying to ask, then what question would be better than that? You know, what knowledge could I gain that would transform my life and the lives of those immediately affected by my life? And so I guess if you're asking, yeah, you know, is there something in this book that can help people in our current age to you know, gain a little bit of deeper wisdom and to perhaps not be one of those people who wanders off the cliff. Certainly, but here's the problem. You know, I was very fortunate with the book deal that I got, that I'm working with somebody who believes in artistic vision and is willing to say, go and make this as good as you want it to be. And that's why it's a hardcover. It's got beautiful photography. There's extra stuff in the hardcover that people won't get online. But the benefit of that is that I'm working with somebody who truly believes that we can make something like this work in the world. Whereas when I was reaching out to publishers, a lot of it is like, we do not accept poetry. We do not accept poetry. But poetry is something that people inevitably have, the masses of people at least, have a kind of negative response to. You know, it seems kind of boring. It seems kind of out there, you know, not really something that they want to get involved with. So I think my big challenge is really like, how do I, as a poet, get people to see that there's something that they can get in this book that they will not get in the standard personal development book? And I think that what I'm trying to do with my poetry is offer a space for personal transformation through this metaphorical structure that links you to the culture that you're a part of, you know, that links you to all of these beautiful natural and cultural resources that we have at our hands, gives you a deeper understanding of perhaps what it is that we're all doing here. So I don't know if that necessarily answers your question, other than to say that I have quite a difficult adventure ahead of me, and I'm looking forward to trying to solve those issues of how do I actually get people to see that this might be a book that would be transformational for them if they would spend the time with it.
Your website is thewalledgarden.com?
Yep.
Okay, we can find out more about not only your pursuits, but the book too.
Absolutely. Yeah, so if they go there, they'll find everything.
The book is The Poet and the Sage, A Journey Beyond the Distant Hills, from our guest, Simon Drew. Simon, thanks for being on the show, for writing the book, and leaving us with such an optimistic feeling. It's so badly needed right now, and whenever you have a project you want to talk about, please come back and see us again.
Thank you, John. This has been beautiful. I appreciate your time.
And all the best to you and everyone in Australia. And thank you for being a part of the show today, and always, your support is very much appreciated. Be well, and I'll talk to you soon.